This is The State of Things, and we are live from Upstage Cabaret in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Thank you. Well, Republicans don't deny that they purposefully drew the state election maps to favor their own party. In fact, Harnett County Representative David Lewis said that at the time, the only reason the maps aren't more skewed is they couldn't figure out how to pull it off. This kind of partisan gerrymandering may not sit well with voters, but it is perfectly legal and it is practiced by both parties. That is, for now. Earlier this month, federal judges ruled that the congressional maps drawn by the Republican majority went too far and are unconstitutional. They demanded that our state's districts be redrawn by the end of the month. But the U.S. Supreme Court has since issued a stay, and that delays implementation of that order. Meanwhile, a racial gerrymandering case affecting Guilford County and other parts of the state as well will also likely resurface in the courts. Here to help us make sense of these cases and their political implications is Stephen Friedland. He's a senior scholar, a professor of law, and an associate dean at Elon University Law School. Stephen, welcome to The State of Things. Good to have you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So tell us about, let's talk about the congressional maps first, because that has been most recent in the news. Federal courts have said they're illegally gerrymandered. The U.S. Supreme Court said, hold it, you know, I'm going to hold off action on that ruling. What was at stake here? Because it is unusual, isn't it, for the courts to weigh in on political gerrymandering.
So this is all about the right to vote. We have this right to vote in our country that cannot be diluted. And that means that the politicians or the people who draw the maps can't make sure that our votes who are on the other party's side really don't count as much as the people who are on their party's side. The courts have held that when you draw maps based on race, that's unconstitutional. So that's been the existing law for a while. For the first time, however, in a long time, in 13 years, the court has said, maybe we'll consider again our prior rulings and reconsider whether drawing it based on politics, based on partisanship, is also unconstitutional. So this is a battle of the Constitution. It's a battle of powers, legislative powers and the court's powers. And who should do what? It's really unclear.
But that's always what's at stake when the court rules on legislation. They're always dipping into what a legislature or a Congress has passed as law. They're basically crossing the line every time they rule on law, right?
Courts are supposed to interpret statutes and interpret the Constitution. They're supposed to be the referee. The question is whether they get into the game. And many people are claiming when they start wading into political gerrymandering, they are in the wrong sphere. They're over-helping out and working within the legislative sphere. So the question now as to whether the courts are going too far. And in a recent case that was argued in the fall, Chief Justice Roberts said, we got to watch out for our institutional reputation. We don't want people saying we've become part of the process, part of the game itself.
The game has been going on for more than 200 years. The political parties have drawn maps in their favor, going back, as you told us a moment ago, before we went on air, going back to 1812. So this is a longstanding precedent.
So the name gerrymandering has an interesting origin. A guy named Elbridge Gerry was the governor of Massachusetts in the early 1800s. He also became vice president for James Madison and signed the Declaration of Independence. Person who is the first gerrymander. And they call it gerrymander because when he approved it, it looked like a salamander. So they used his name Gerry and from salamander, and that's why we call it gerrymandering.
All right, so there's a right to vote. There's also the right, as you say, that's a free speech right to some extent. And then there are other legal questions that are also involved, other constitutional tests that could also be brought to bear on this, right?
So this is becoming one of the issues of our era. It's not going away. And although I said it is part of the right to vote, and Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg calls it the precious right to vote. That's what she said in the oral argument in the Gill case in the fall, one of the major cases argued by the court. But there's also a First Amendment right to express your preference for a political party. And the court has a question, should they even take these cases at all? Four of the justices seem to believe we shouldn't be in this ball game at all. We should be sitting on the sidelines and watching. Four of the justices seem to say, we want this, bring it on. And sitting right square in the middle in the Chewy Center is Kennedy, Justice Kennedy, as usual. is right there, and he looks like, once again, he's going to decide a major issue in this country.
Which is why we can't make too much of the fact that the court has taken the case at all, because there's a rule of four, as you've explained before.
Yeah, they
right?
call it the gang of four. That is, you need four people to approve to take a case. Now, it doesn't mean they'll decide it.
Yeah.
They can actually decide to kick these cases back, at least the partisan or political gerrymandering ones, and say, we don't want to hear this. This is not for us. So they still can do that. The alternative is to say, we'll take this case. We're the courts. We interpret. And we can interpret. But even Justice Breyer has said, and he's someone in favor of taking these cases, what's going to be the manageable standard? We don't know how to say what's good and what's bad.
All right. So now we're still talking about political gerrymandering, and at stake here are the congressional maps drawn by the North Carolina General Assembly. We talked about racial gerrymandering a minute ago. I'm going to get to that in a second. But I want to know what happens here. You've got a federal court, federal district court, that says they're unconstitutional, redraw them and have it to my desk quickly because the election's coming up. U.S. Supreme Court says, hold. Just we're going to put that one on hold for a minute. Why? Because they're already considering two other cases? Is that part of it? Or what would be the reason for that? And what's the impact on us?
So while there's a lot of action going on in North Carolina, many, many cases, it's also going on in Maryland, in Texas, and the Wisconsin case they heard when in 2011 they redrew the maps, and the Democrats complained that the Republicans engaged in political gerrymandering. So it's going on all over the country. And what's happening, once there's a complaint, the other side then says, wait a minute, we're doing it exactly the right way. And the Supreme Court does not want lots of different decisions, because then there's going to be all of this litigation out there that they're going to have to resolve. So much like cell phones, they didn't take the case till 2014, and I think that was until after they all got their own cell phones and saw what that really meant. I think here they're saying, let's put the brakes on, let's wait. And they're waiting till they can come up with something that they all, or at least five, can agree on, because what's the most important thing in the Supreme Court? The number five. Mm. They all have to have five people to make a decision.
So once one of these big cases that's now before the Supreme Court is adjudicated, what happens to the one that's on hold in North Carolina?
So that actually may be affected by the ones in the court right now. We have the Maryland case that's going to be argued. The Wisconsin case was argued. That can definitely affect the couple of cases that are on hold here. And I think that's why they put it on hold. They don't want lots of litigation going on. They want to consolidate. However, putting it on hold really tells North Carolinians we are still going to operate under the old map. So in all likelihood, even though it may be an unconstitutional map, we are probably going to operate on the existing map right now. It's not going to happen. They don't like, there's a rule that says don't handle election issues right before elections. So as we get closer and time goes on, time is the enemy of changing the maps.
But you talked about technology, cell phones, and maybe it was when the Supreme Court members got their own phones. The fact is, technology is playing an important part in the courts deciding that now's the time, maybe we should relook at this, right?
So what's happening, this, of course, has been going on since 1812, but they did not have what was called big data. And now they can go into a household and find out not only what they're buying at Target and Amazon, but which way they voted, and what's going to happen in the foreseeable future. So we're actually putting into the algorithms almost household by household data so they can control the maps. And what this is doing is, some people are complaining now, they're doing this so it really undermines our right to vote. People are going to stop voting if they know it's preordained, it's stacked in a certain way. And that is going to affect us to such an extent that it's that notion of going too far.
Can you look at outcomes and use those as indications of having gone too far? A state that votes mostly Democratic in statewide races has a 10-2 Republican representation in Congress. I mean, is that an argument?
So there's a new theory out called the efficiency gap. And the efficiency gap suggests that when you look at any jurisdiction, you can figure out how many wasted votes there were by those who won and those who lost. And based on that information, it's a statistical analysis, you can figure out when there was political gerrymandering. Now, the other side says, what you're doing now is throwing this all to the experts, and we're just going to have an ugly battle of the experts and statistics, and no one really knows whether it was done intentionally or there was some inadvertence as well. So there's now two different camps, and what we do know is the technology has outpaced our law. and our approach under the Constitution.
Let's talk about the racial gerrymandering case. Again, that was one that the courts have said the North Carolina legislature has to redraw those maps. This because of racial discrimination at the statewide level. Where is that case now, and what can we expect in 2018? Will there be new maps?
Well, we've had redrawing last summer. And then the court looked at it again and said this wasn't good enough. So they called in a special master, a professor from Stanford Law School, who came in and said there's eight counties, we need to light districts, we need to look at them, and he proposed new ones. They had in December a comment and a question period, and the court looked at them and said, we're going to recommend these maps. What's going to happen now? More lawsuit, more challenge. So in all likelihood, we again are not going to see, in all likelihood, and again, I can't predict. I mean, I didn't know Bitcoin would be that high, and I didn't know it would go that low. So we can't predict here either. But right now, it's on hold.
Stephen Friedland is a senior scholar, professor of law, and associate dean at Elon School of Law. Thank you so much for being on our program.
Thank you.
Just ahead, a High Point University professor created a lesson that sent students out of the classroom and into living civil rights legacy all around them. But first, we'll hear the music of Lorena Guillen Tango Ensemble. They're going to be playing live in just a few moments. We'll give you a sample of their music right here on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. We'll be right back. Thanks, folks.
Across the sun,